Welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show. And now it's time to go to the Fool phones. The Fool phone lines are open. Our big red phone is blinking here at Fool HQ. The phone number 866-NPR-FOOL. I welcome, as always, Diana Yoakam, our resident personal finance expert here at the Motley Fool. Diana, happy summer.
You too, David.
Let's go to St. Louis, Missouri. William, welcome to the show.
Hi. Glad to be on.
Thank you. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, what I was wondering about is Berkshire Hathaway. It's like this iconic stock that everyone looks up to. And, of course, Warren Buffett is the motivator behind it. Mm-hmm. Berkshire Hathaway wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Warren Buffett. Well, the thing is, Warren Buffett isn't immortal. So what's going to happen to Berkshire Hathaway when the inevitable happens and Warren dies?
Bite your tongue, William.
No, I'm not going to.
William acknowledges human mortality, and I think that's something we probably don't do enough in our society. So we celebrate that on this show. And William, first of all, Berkshire Hathaway, I'm sure many of our listeners are already familiar, but it's a holding company run by the legendary investor Warren Buffett. Started off as an insurance company and actually then began to build out its own portfolio of companies, bought Geico, bought Washington Post, many other very fine companies, and is typically held on to those companies over long periods of time, continues to make new investments, and Buffett's focus on finding good managers who are running businesses that will definitely still be around in 15 years and are profitable has made him a billionaire, a multi-billionaire, one of the richest people in America. So that's a little bit of background on the Warren Buffett leaving the world question, and that's a question that's been asked in this show before, and I think I'm going to give the same answer because I feel the same way today in 2005 as I did, let's say, in 2002, and that is that I really think, William, that Berkshire Hathaway is a much bigger company than we're probably thinking about when we think in Buffett-like terms. I think, in particular, in our TV-centric society where we point a camera at Donald Trump and everyone thinks that he runs all of Trump or Martha Stewart really runs Martha Stewart. I think the reality is, in most cases, these are larger entities that are not at all as dependent as we probably think on one person. There's no question Warren Buffett has earned every penny that he's made in this world and has been absolutely brilliant manager. But the reality is also he's built out a wonderful organization, right? I mean, he's got a whole bunch of different companies with good managers he respects. So if you were to look at a short list of the companies in America that could probably generate a great CEO next, I would look and say Berkshire is on my short list of a company that could probably come up with another great CEO to replace its existing CEO. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, that certainly does. I was thinking that, after all, he can't do everything. He must have a good staff. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you hear about some people on his staff. But what about some of the philosophies that he engenders and that control the existing organization, specifically his refusal to ever have split the stock? Do you think when he goes, the stock will split?
I think, by the way, that's an interesting corporate practice, a decision that we make much of as investors because we find it interesting and it's responsible for a very high-priced stock. But I don't view that as a tremendously important decision either way. However, I wouldn't be surprised if the company continues not to do that in his honor. And certainly over the years, they have made it possible to buy the stock more cheaply through their B shares, which are priced in the thousands of dollars instead of the tens of thousands of dollars. But I think for the most part, again, a lot of what I think the organization is an embodiment of his ideals, and I think the organization is bigger than one man. So I would expect that you will see more similar practices post-Buffett than with Buffett there today. That would just be my guess.
Well, I thank you for this viewpoint.
And, you know, William, it's probably worth mentioning that Charlie Munger is Warren Buffett's right-hand man and has been is regarded as, if not quite equally, the genius of Buffett, nevertheless one of the really genius investors in America and has been for a few decades, too. So even Warren Buffett himself, I think, would quickly point to Charlie Munger and many of the other people around him and say they're the reason for the success of Berkshire every bit as much as I am. And I believe that, too.
All right, thank you very much.
We thank you very much. An excellent set of questions, William. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Let's go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken, you're on the line. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate you taking my call.
Well, it's our pleasure. What are we going to talk about?
Well, I'm in the qualms of trying to debate whether or not it's more economically feasible to buy just a regular truck tractor that has a standard sleeper or get what we call a live lab, which has the kitchen sink, the toilet, and everything in it. We're looking probably about a $30,000 to $35,000 price variance.
It sounds like, are you a professional trucker, sir?
Yes. Okay. For United Van Lines.
Okay, good. So,
and you said we, when you called in, you said we're debating this. Who's the other person in this picture?
Well, my significant other half. She works at home, but she ran with me for about 4 years after our kids got out of school. But now she'd like to take a trip once in a while just to be with me and see the country again.
Okay.
And so you are assessing two different purchasing options, and there's a $35,000 difference between the two.
Correct.
Can you describe briefly, just to paint the mental picture for us, the first, and then describe the second, just so we can see what we're thinking about?
Okay. First is just what I have now, a standard tractor with a 60-inch sleeper. That incorporates about a 42-inch bunk, has cabinets all around the top to put miscellaneous stuff in, a little clothes closet, a small refrigerator, and so it's just basic enough to get by. I've got a porta potty that I store underneath the bunk.
Okay, and I probably bears saying, at least it does for me. When you say tractor, Ken, you're talking truck here, right?
Yeah, it's a truck, but it's called a truck tractor because it pulls a trailer on what we call a fifth wheel.
Okay, good. So I'm starting to learn the lingo. Now let's talk about what we're thinking about paying an extra $35,000 for.
Okay, it's what we call a live lab. It's a 120-inch sleeper. It has everything in it from the bathroom to a shower, kitchen sink, microwave, full-blown stereo system, television. It's basically a home away from home.
That sounds a lot nicer than where I live.
Generator to run so you don't burn a gallon an hour wasting your big 500-horsepower engine. That takes about a quart an hour, and it runs your heat in the winter and cooling in the summertime.
So is there any reason beyond the $35,000 extra not to buy this one? It sounds like your significant other, if it's your wife, sounds like that's what she's in favor of. And it sounds like, you know, this could be a natural progression for a guy who's spent at least a portion of his life in and around trucks. Why not step it up and go for it?
Yeah, I had one. I bought a previous one back in 86 when my wife went with me. And after she decided to quit, I figured, well, I didn't need it anymore, so I went back to a regular truck. And it was a pain in the neck, believe me.
Hmm. So it was a pain in the neck at the time, or was it a pain in the neck to transition away from it?
Transition away.
Okay, so you're describing something that, in fact, you've already done before, so some maybe feelings of nostalgia. And now that the kids are growing up, you can go back to that fun existence you led before. It only sounds more and more to me, Ken, like you should be stepping up and putting up the extra $35,000. But I think the big question comes down to, is your own financial situation able to do that?
It's going to push it a little bit because I just built my retirement house for half a mil, and that's up my house payment quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But like I say, if I could be have the enjoyment of my wife going with me once in a while, I think she would be more apt to with a luxury sleeper. And the other side, I can eat better. I'm sure a lot of you people think truck stops have good food. they do in a sense, but their portions are too dang much. I mean, if you look at the majority of truckers, they're probably 80 to 90% all overweight with big guts hanging out.
Okay.
Because all you do is sit and drive in a truck all day.
Yeah, it's kind of a sedentary line of work, unfortunately.
You know,
right.
Full disclosure here, Ken, I have to mention, I guess I should mention, that my father-in-law, my wife's father, sits on the board of directors of a company called Pilot, which I assume you're familiar with.
Oh, absolutely.
Pilot, as I understand it anyway, and I haven't talked a lot of Pilot with my father-in-law, but Pilot owns a lot of those truck stops across America.
Yes, they do. Pilot started out just a kind of like a cut-rate truck service station. Most of their property isn't that large. You can only probably put maybe 20 to 30 trucks in most of the yards. However, the last 2 years, they've gone on a big buying spree. They mm-hmm. bought up a lot of the older truck stops, put their name brand on it, So now you can go into a pilot that's got 100 to 200 parking spots.
Mm.
But basically, most of them, they don't have a decent restaurant. They've got a Wendy's or a McDonald's and Arby's or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny, Ken, because over the last few years, as you may have noticed, that low-carb craze out there on this radio show, we felt compelled to ask many different CEOs in many different industries, frankly, has the low-carb craze affected you? Ken, you mentioned truckers struggle with their weight sometimes. I got to ask, did the whole low-carb craze catch on with truckers, so far as you could tell?
No. It's the buffet. You go into Tetros or Flying J's, TA's, the buffet is the main item. You get a buffet for about an evening meal, $8-$9
yep.
plus drink.
Yep.
And they can sit down and just gorge themselves. So that's where they all get overweight.
Back to your question to close, Ken. It sounds to me as if you probably do have the financial resources to make this move at this point in your life. If necessary, if for some reason it wasn't working out, as you bought this larger, you said 120-inch, which I think quick math says 10-foot sleeper, tractor cab you're talking about, it sounds to me as if you could always sell it, because you've done that once before. And it
right.
sounds to me especially, you brought another voice into this conversation, even though we didn't hear her, and that's your wife. And it sounds as if she'd be a happier person if you stepped up at this point in your life and put up the extra $35,000 for that that vehicle. So I would suggest that you do so. Ken?
Well, I appreciate the time, and good luck with your in-law and the pilot.
Do you have any advice, actually, since I can tap here a member of the board of directors of one of the large truck stop companies in America?
Tell them to get a regular restaurant and put a low-calorie or, you know, a menu that will detract from the big guts around the country.
That is an excellent suggestion. I will make sure I pass that on. Ken, good luck with your decision. Please feel free to call us back a year from today and let us know what you did.
Okay, sure will, Steve.
Thank you, sir. The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Let's go to Boston, Massachusetts. Hello, Constance.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for joining us on the show. And let me just say up front, there are not enough Constances in our world. I've always loved the name, but I'm not sure that I've ever spoken to another Constance. I mean, I read it in 19th century literature, it seems. There are characters named Constance, but not enough today in 2005.
Well, it's a good name. It has a good meaning.
What are we talking about?
I have a question. My husband and I carry about $10,000 worth of credit card debt.
Okay.
And the only reason we carry it is because we borrow at 0% interest. I could pay it off. I do have more than that in terms of liquid cash, but I keep getting these wonderful offers from credit card companies that last anywhere from 8 months to a year and a half.
Okay, and it's always saying 0%, Constance? Is that it?
Always 0% and no balance transfer fees. That's what I look for.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep rolling it from one to the next, and I've borrowed for many, many years without paying a dime.
Wow.
My question is,
it sounds as if that's been
into trouble.
Yeah, will that ever get Constance into trouble? It sounds as if that's been a Constance in her life.
Oh. Yes, it has.
This is bad. It sounds like you definitely know how to play the game, and that's great. You're using the credit card companies. You're not letting them use you for cash and fees and interest rates and all of that. So good for you, and also good for you for looking for those loopholes like the balance transfer fees and otherwise. But I do have to caution, every time you open a new line of credit, every time you apply for a new card and activate it and roll over a new balance, that's a new entry on your credit report. And even if that account is only open for a short period of time, even 3 months, that will be on your credit report for 7 years at
okay,
the very
so
least.
What's the big deal here, Dana? I mean, Constance just mm-hmm. has a longer credit report than some other people.
Right. It shows someone who is always applying for new lines of credit, if some are open, some aren't, that can send up some red flags for lenders, maybe a mortgage lender who's wondering exactly why is someone doing this? Can they not handle the debt that they've had over the years? They don't know that you're paying 0% interest on those debts. So all they see are you applying for different credit cards with various companies.
Well, let me then ask you this, Diana. Constance and her husband, it sounds like, have been doing this for some years now. So we're already talking about quite a long credit report. And frankly, this has been something that's been working for them.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing. But this is actually something that we advocate at The Motley Fool. We tell people, use this system, use the lenders, negotiate for a lower interest rate with your present lenders if you can, or roll over a balance to a lower interest rate cards. And you've done that beautifully, Constance. So congratulations on that. But you said you have the money. You have the money to pay it off. You have more than enough.
I do. It's just that what I have in the bank makes interest, and this costs me nothing. So that's my question.
Well, it probably, it does cost you something.
It's the American dream. It's the American dream. Let's face it. Let's acknowledge it up front.
No, but there is a cost to doing this. There's your time and your vigilance. You have to stay on top of this because I'm sure you've discovered lenders have found a lot of different ways to tack on fees to get you. If you are late paying another bill, say your cell phone bill or your gas bill or another charge card bill, other lenders who have the universal default clause is what it's called in the contract, they can raise your interest rate. Not because you've been paying on time with them. You're a great customer, according to them. They don't care. They saw that you paid another bill late. Suddenly, the penalty rate is put on your debts, and you're paying up to 25%.
Okay, so you have to act a little bit more flawlessly than the rest of us if you're playing the I'm switching to the next 0% deal credit card game.
Right. And you always have to make sure you've lined one up. You've lined up another one to roll over the balance.
That's true.
Well, I figured if I ever didn't have one, then I'd just pay it off and that would be it. I'd bite the bullet.
Well, it's nice to know that you're in a position to do that.
Well, I could.
Sure, and it's nice to be in a position to do that. Constance, has any of these credit card companies ever given you a hard time?
Never. No, they eat out of my hand.
This is an inspiring story to tell America.
Out of her hand. I love that.
Well, I mean, it was you, Diana, who said, don't let the system use you. Use the system.
That's right.
And Constance is doing that. It sounds like she's playing it like a stringed violin.
Well, I do think that sounds like you're a bright woman, and maybe you can take the time now to find some investment that's making even better interest rate than your savings account. That's $10,000 you could have working for you in, maybe in CDs if this is your emergency savings, or online banks are offering pretty good interest rates, or even the stock market. Obviously, we at The Motley Fool, we love the stock market, and I'd love to hear that you're spending your extra time instead of comparing credit card offers, comparing balance sheets, companies.
Constance, thank you very much for calling the show. Best wishes.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week. The Fool Phone lines are always open for your financial questions and comments. Give us a call anytime during the week at 866-NPR-FOOL. Diana, thank you again for your perspective.
Thank you, David.